Blog Talk Radio. I'm here in New York City, where there's, I think, there's an attempt out there to achieve some spring weather. An attempt. That's all. Well, I see tulips emerging from my front yard, so that may be a good sign. At this point, they are one lips. Well, we're going to the Quad Cities this time. Where the hell is that, you just asked? It's where the Mississippi, or is it the Mississippi River, runs east and west. It's the cities of Davenport and Bettendorf in Iowa, and Moline and East Moline and Rock Island in Illinois. Now, what we're going to have, we got an amazing place, especially during the early fall, called Country Corner. And that will be our first guest. And then we're then on to the Putnam Museum and IMAX Theater for Science and 3D. Then we're going to relax and rejuvenate at John Taylor Day Spa. We then get to find out how the city of Davenport got its name. And forget the Dear John letter. We're going to be talking about John Deere. So right now, we're going to go to Country Corner. And we have Andrea on the air, I believe.
You are right, Merle. Hello again.
Hello. So, tell us, I mean, my visit there was just wonderful. I thought it was, I went there in September, so you can tell what it was like in September before you tell what it's like at the moment. I'm sure it's completely different.
Oh, yes, yes. We have seasons here just like you do in New York, but you know, we were just saying today that we don't know if we could be taken away from seasons or not. I think, wasn't it Steinbeck or one of those guys who wrote a travel book and said that Florida has a climate, but he missed seasons, and that's the difference, isn't it, between
yeah.
the South and the North and the Midwest.
That's right.
Right now it's raining, and we love that because rain is exactly what we need to make all those one lips turn into two lips. I love that, Merle. That was hilarious. And also, more importantly, to make the things at Country Corner grow, because Bruce, who owns Country Corner and has for 30 years, is out in the fields right now. So he said, Andrea, can you talk to Merle? So I said, yes.
What's he doing in fields? Is he picking, plowing,
well,
planting?
Actually, they try to plow by early in March. As soon as you can get that self-scouring plow out into the fields, and I'm sure you learned all about that at the John Deere Center, you go out there and start breaking up this good, rich, black dirt. And then he proceeds to plant 40 acres in corn and beans, because that's what many farmers in this area do. But then he plants the other 40 in produce. And we have fabulous produce out here because he grows it in black dirt. And so many people grow their produce in sand.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that some of your produce in the stores will travel 1,500 miles before it gets to you.
Is that why it's not so good?
That's why it's not so good.
I was wondering why I keep, you know, I have a problem with getting produce, you know, that it's fresh. And it's like, yeah, well, it probably was green when they picked it and figured since it's going to travel all the mileage by the time it gets to the store, it'll start to ripen.
Sometimes I look at my fruits and vegetables and think, good grief, they're better traveled than I am. But, you know, that's why we need people to come visit. I want to tell you something that you may not know. There is a big movement in this country to what is called community-supported agriculture. Are you familiar with that?
No. Let's tell them.
Well, they're called CSA Farms, and Country Corner is one. And what that means, a lot of your listeners probably will know about this if they're really into getting their produce as fresh as possible. It's a contract between a customer and the produce farmer. And the customer says, I'm going to buy a share of your crop for the entire season. So starting May 1, our CSA customers will have locked in their produce prices up front. They'll be getting produce that was picked either that day or the day before, and it is either delivered to them in half bushel or bushel baskets, or they come out to the farm and they pick it up off a hay rack and get exactly what they want in terms of the corn, the radishes, the lettuce, whatever. And people really like this because they get this feel-good feeling supporting their local farmer, supporting their local economy, and knowing that what they're feeding their family is just as fresh and good and local as it can possibly be. So we're a CSA farm. We're gathering our memberships, and we're very proud of it.
Now, it's not like I can, like, from here in New York, say, I'll take a share.
No, I'm afraid not. But you know what, Merle? There are CSA farms out where you are. The problem is that your growing season, I think, starts a little earlier. For instance, one of our customers called us and said, my daughter wanted to join a CSA in the Washington, D.C. area, and by the time she found one in February, they had already closed their memberships. Now, we start planting right about Mother's Day weekend because, well, I think Bruce actually plants the 1st of May, but that's late enough that we can still take memberships. So you'll find a CSA farm, I don't know about in New York City, but I bet you have some in your area.
Well, if they do it anywhere around here, they probably do it out on Long Island.
Right, exactly.
Like, yeah, in Suffolk County on Long Island, it's like all the wineries are there and a lot of farm stands. So,
I bet you'll find a CSA farm or two out there, too.
Yeah,
it started in Japan. The concept started
really?
In Japan, and it has come over here, yes.
So now what I want to talk about is to tell people, you know, what's there when you get there, or the things to do other than, like, stop by and buy, you know, the produce.
Oh, you know, Merle, Bruce went to a couple of agritourism conferences this year, and Bruce is one of these people who is a boundless bundle of energy anyway, but he came back so pumped. And he is just adding and expanding all the time. So we are normally, in past years, he's been known as a produce stand in the summer. And you stop by, you know, you pull your car off the road and you stop by and you buy a plant or you buy, you know, some tomatoes or whatever's in season. And then in the fall, and that's when you were there, we were just gearing up for the big September-October season, which is really a big one for Bruce because he's a pumpkin farmer. But this year we are starting our weekend festivals with Mother's Day weekend. Mother's Day weekend, there's going to be free plants. There'll be. I have to describe the farm, Merle. It is. Well, you were there. It's a farm stand and a store. It's a little craft barn. It is a timber park of trees, and it is a barnyard zoo for the kids to pet the animals, and we have lots of activities for the family, hay rack rides, Those are pulled by big draft horses. Oh, we're very excited because September 20th and 21st is our old time festival. And this year it's really going to be old time. We have Belgians coming in from Iowa, and they are going to do old-fashioned plowing with draft horses. And then another guy is going to bring his Belgians, or Clydesdales, I'm not sure which, and going to hook them up to a baler, an antique baler, and bale hay the way it used to be done. So there's always something from May 1 to October 31st going on out at Country Corner.
Well, one of the things I loved with the hayride is, the lecture, is the information.
Right, yes. You learned all about how pumpkins have moms, dads, and belly buttons, right?
Yes, moms, dads, and belly buttons. Tell us about that.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I was a tour guide last summer, and when I agreed to be a tour guide, it never occurred to me that that was going to include not only giving the little spiel on pumpkins, but driving the tractor. So we would say, well, welcome to Country Corner. Let's take a hay rack ride and go out and learn about pumpkins and then, you know, jump on the tractor and drive them out there. And I never had a farmer bale off the hay rack, but I always thought maybe a couple of them wanted to when they saw me get on there and drive. The pumpkin has a mother and a father. And when you go out into the field and see all these beautiful acres of orange pumpkins growing, you'll also see some gorgeous yellow flowers. Now, some of the flowers just have straight stems, and those are the father pumpkins, the father blossoms. And then some of the flowers have, right below this beautiful yellow flower, they have a little green globe or a little green bump. And when you hold this up and show it to kids and say, which one is the mommy flower and which one's the daddy, the kids usually get that the one with the little bump on its stem is the mommy. And the way those two flowers get together to make a pumpkin is through the bees. We have 50,000 bees at Country Corner in the summertime. In the wintertime, they go home with the beekeeper. We have a beekeeper not too far away who brings us honey. And when you stop by Country Corner, you can buy honey that was created by the bees about 20 miles away. So it's really, really good.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that. But you know, the people eat the flowers. Is a delicacy, too.
You kind of taught us that. I'm not sure that people around here do, but I know that they do other places. And, you know, I think you even got Bruce interested in researching, should I be marketing these pumpkin flowers along with the pumpkins?
Oh, you know, they're a delicacy, especially and squash flowers. They're very... Italians tend to, that's where I got it from an Italian friend. I said, what? I'm eating what? And it was what people tend to do is take them and bread them or coat them a little flour and fry them up and eat them. They're really tasty. But, you know, like if you're taking you're taking the parents away from them. those are the flowers that are making. Well, I suppose it's like you're eating eggs, you know. It's the thought of, you know, well, if you leave the egg going, you'll have a chicken, right? But
one of the things that is a part of our CSA membership is farm fresh eggs, and people call us and say, "Are those free range chickens?" And we say, "Well, tell you what, the person who is in charge of these chickens is such an animal lover. Believe me, these chickens are going to be out running around." And by free range, you mean, are they not kept in a cage 24 hours a day? You bet they're free range. And so we have so many people who are excited. This is kind of a new thing at Country Corner, too. But we're going to have 65 chickens, and those chickens will be laying eggs that will just float right out of the box.
Oh, wow.
Hey, here's something else. Did you know that an egg that you buy in the store may have left the chicken 9 months ago? That's how long an egg keeps, but that doesn't necessarily make it farm fresh.
Oh, okay.
I'm a, think about that the next time you scramble up that.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow. So actually, do you think there's a difference in taste if I got it like fresh or 9 months later?
Yes, because I am accustomed, as you are probably, to buying my eggs at the supermarket, and I'm accustomed to the way they taste. Well, once I seem to have got a new shipment or something, or maybe we bought some eggs from a farm, I don't recall, but I just couldn't believe the difference. The things I baked with farm fresh eggs or with fresh eggs were fluffier, the omelets were fluffier, lighter, the taste, well, you know, I mean, compare fresh taste to kind of not fresh taste.
That's kind of like milk. By the time you're drinking it, it's definitely like been a while since it got out of the cow.
Been a while. When I was a little girl, my grandparents milked by hand, and I will say this: I am not all that old. Well, I'm old, but you know, I actually had almost pioneer grandparents because my mother was very young. She was the youngest of eight, and her father was 60 when she was born. So I was lucky to have grandparents who almost did things, you know, the way they did in the 19th century. But the thing I really hated, the only thing I hated about visiting my grandparents was that they got their milk right out of the cow, and then they put it on the table, and it was like, because it wasn't pasteurized and wasn't used to it. It was probably much fresher.
Well, I've had it like it's gone into the steel vat first.
Uh-huh.
And then taken right from there. So I guess it was pasteurized maybe, but not homogenized.
Or maybe it was homogenized. Well, yeah, it was probably pasteurized if it was in the steel vat. But you'll have to talk to a dairy farmer. Getting out of my area here.
Yeah, but that's not your thing there.
No, milk's not my thing.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about the maize that you have.
The corn maize.
Yeah. How is it like? How do you do it? Do you
That is so cool. A corn maze is basically a pattern cut in a cornfield. And the way it is done is the farmer or the designer looks for a picture. Maybe it's in a coloring book. Maybe it's an outline of a witch with a hat and a couple of goblins, which is what we did last year. Or I have seen them so complicated that they actually write things in the corn. Now, the only way you can see this maze is from air. And the way it is transferred from a coloring book to the cornfield is that they put it on graph paper. They assign numbers to the points on the graph. Then they take a computer, a laptop, out in the field. They mark numbers in the field to correspond to those points on the graph, and then they come in and mow out the corn. It is a huge effort. And then you do lots of other things. You tape off the standing corn from the path so that people who are walking through it won't be tempted to just take off through the corn, because we have lots of kids at Country Corner. We do school tours all the time, and family and group tours and birthday parties. Know how kids are. They kind of want to explore. So you have to take, they told me, you have to go out and tape the maze. I said, what in the heck is that? Well, I spent most of the day out there winding police caution tape around corn stalks. So corn mazes, when you go through one and when you walk into it, there will be checkpoints along the way, and your goal is to find all those checkpoints, punch a card, and come back, and then we give you a free pumpkin. And if it's your entire family, they all get free pumpkins. People like it. They really do. And this year we're going to do flashlight corn maze trips at night. So if you want to walk through a cornfield at night. And in the fall, we always haunt it, of course.
Well, before we continue, we need to tell everybody exactly where you are.
Country Corner is not that difficult to find. It's actually 20 minutes south of the Quad City Airport. And when you leave the airport, you take about a 1 mile trip on Route 6, and then you turn south on 150 and drive for 20 minutes, and there we are. We're halfway between the Quad Cities and Galesburg, Illinois.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make sure I'll put up the information.
Great.
But then I guess if we just can go to the visitors center. What is a Quad City? Visit Quad City?
Visitquadcities.com, and that's the Quad City Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Okay.
You know, a writer for MSN recently rated the Quad Cities as one of the best overlooked destinations in the country.
I believe it.
And she was discovering what you already know. You know, she went to all the places you went and said, "Wow, this is neat."
It is. It's neat, and it's not the basically. What people will go, it's easiest to get into through going to Chicago? Is that the...
Yes. Actually, believe it or not, Quad City Airport is an international airport. We have huge ridership and very ready access to a lot of major cities. But, you know, people come in from Chicago and then you go from there.
So I think, didn't I come in, was it through AirTran, I believe?
Yes, AirTran.
AirTran, yeah. Thank goodness, AirTran. I love AirTran.
I do, too. I used to take AirTran all the time because I worked at CNN. And for a while, I worked at in Texas and then went back to CNN to anchor headline news on the weekend. So I took AirTran a whole lot because they're based in Atlanta.
Now, one of the other things I want to get in is the different corns. There's corn that's for eating, the sweet corn. Am I correct that that's called sweet corn?
Are you ever? We all live on sweet corn in July. It's called peaches and cream or some version thereof, and... You know, I was telling Bruce this year, I said, "Hey, Bruce, I read about a new variety of sweet corn." And I named this obscure name, and he said, "Oh, yeah, that's not new. That's been around for 15 years, and it has this kind of sugar and this kind of nutrients." And I said, "Okay, I know you know your corn, but now I know you really know your corn." But his corn is so sweet. I don't know. I can't remember if you did this, Merle, but you can take an ear out of the field and eat it. It's just that sweet and tender. So, yeah, there's sweet corn.
So corn doesn't have to be, I mean, if it's sweet and tender, you can eat it raw.
Well, if it's good enough, yes.
Oh, okay. That's interesting to know because,
This year we're having a corn festival and corn boil because... You know, he primarily did the fall festivals, and then somebody said, "Well, you know, in mid-July, we sure have a lot of sweet corn." So July 19th is the Sweet Corn Festival. You can take a hay rack ride to the field. You can pick your own corn, and we'll be having a big corn boil or corn roast, whatever we decide to do. So maybe if somebody's in the area in mid-July, they'd like to come out for that.
Sure. And then I guess there's also the popping corn, which is a different one, and another corn that's like the corn that you use to make corn syrup or the corn flour, you know, things like that, right?
Yes. We tell our school kids and our visitors that there are 5 kinds of corn, and I'm going out on a limb here because then I'm going to have to go through them and be sure I remember them all. Grown at Country Corner. There's the sweet corn we just talked about. There is the field corn, is what you're referring to, that's put into tacos and taco chips and tortilla chips, and your pop, your soda, has anything with corn syrup in it, it comes from field corn. And that's what most farmers in Illinois and Iowa grow, is the field corn. Then you have Indian corn, which is grown specifically for decoration, and people tie it up, you know, by the husks and hang it on their doors in the fall. And then there is the popping corn that you mentioned. That's much smaller. Corn has very tiny little pointed kernels, and you can actually put that ear of corn in a bag. Did you try that? and pop it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't do it in a bag. I don't have a microwave.
Oh,
I got rid of mine. I got rid of my. What I do is I flick the corn off into a little plate and put a little oil in a pot. This is the procedure that I do. Put a little oil in the pot and drop in 3 kernels and cover it. And I listen for the 3 to pop. And once they pop, I know the oil is hot enough. And then I throw in the rest and shake it.
Oh, that's how my mom used to make popcorn, and it was the best. Absolutely. But I never heard the 3 kernel thing.
That's what I had heard, that that's how you could tell when it's ready to throw in all the rest of it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And of course you can. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I wanted to also to comment on the fact that I know I'm like getting away from this, but the one thing was the I always see these commercials about alpacas. People are saying buy an alpaca, have an alpaca farm, and I just want people to know there are actual alpacas there.
Oh yes.
So if you want to really see if they really exist.
Right, we have a barnyard zoo, and we have those. Actually, there are farmers in our area who raise llamas, alpacas. We have an elk farm nearby, which is another fun thing to visit. And we have there are a couple of camels out in the field nearby here. I don't know exactly what they do with them. I know they don't eat them, but. But anyway, at our barnyard zoo, we have European deer. We have the smallest cattle in the world. They are Zebu cattle. They are miniature cattle. And we have a miniature Sicilian donkey named Sally. And a goose. I seem to remember you liked the goose awfully well. No, but you were especially fond of the alpacas, weren't you? That
was
your favorite.
Yes.
That's right.
And fond of the
goose. Yeah. Your astute listeners are going to be saying she only mentioned 4 kinds of corn.
All right, what was the other one?
Who missed number 5? It's broom corn, and that is grown purely to make brooms.
Really?
Yep.
Now, when you say
that's how the early
settlers. Oh, in other
words,
you're just using the.
They don't have ears. They have more like those individual straws that are in a broom actually come from the top of broom corn, and it's grown only for that purpose. Yes, so that's number.
Wow. And I thought I got it all in when I was there. I guess I missed something.
You missed the broom corn.
Wow, that's really great. Yeah, I really like. I definitely urge people, if you're going to the Quad Cities, I mean, that is like, you know, that's the place to go. I mean, you have to make sure you go to Country Corner. I mean, you know, that's it's wonderful.
Thank you, Merle. We think so.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. And, I'm ready to go on to our next segment. So I appreciate your calling in, Andrea, and I'll be in touch because I know you can't send me the strawberries, but
you'll have to come pick them yourself. We do a lot of you pick out here, and we do try. Our goals are exceptional quality produce at a fair price, and what we call positively outrageous service. So you come out.
Oh, it is. It is.
We'll be happy to see you anytime.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank
you. I'll be in touch.
All right. Bye.
Bye. And. Okay, so right now I'm going to cut to a commercial before we go on to our next segment. I did, you know, mention AirTran, but I love AirTran, but here is the other one. That
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra legroom.
Uh-huh. We have extra legroom as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay, if I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No, that is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but It has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue, based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Yes, don't you love that? I just love that commercial. And so now we're going to go to the Putnam Museum and IMAX Theater to talk about science and 3D movies. And do I have Kim on the line?
Hi, Merle.
Hello.
This is Kim at the Putnam.
Yeah. So tell us, I mean, you know, I was there, of course, but tell the folks, you know, what the Putnam Museum is and what you got for us.
Well, Merle, the Putnam Museum is a wonderful experience for people of all ages to come and enjoy themselves. We call it edutainment. You're going to learn a little something, but it won't be painful at all. It will be a great experience. You'll have a lot of fun. And we have exhibits that take you through history. We have exhibits that teach you more about natural science, the environment. And right now, for example, we have a film in our IMAX 3D theater called Grand Canyon Adventure. And in this film, you go on a whitewater rafting experience down the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon in 3D.
Oh.
Then we have an exhibit that goes along with that, because the film is also talking to us about freshwater preservation and how water levels are changing, and scientists are learning more about areas that are in drought and what we can all do, each of us, to maybe help conserve our fresh water so everybody from the Southwest doesn't have to move up here in a couple of decades.
Oh,
okay. So that's yeah. What we like to do is give you a great entertaining film that's a lot of fun, but also, you know, we learn a little something that we can maybe take action on in our own life, and provide that for everybody from 8 months old to 88 years old.
Wow. So it's an idea. Okay, tell me, like, what would be considered the permanent exhibits and what's, like, you know, coming up? So let's start
traveling.
With what the
sure.
permanent exhibits.
Well, the icon of our museum is that we have two mummies here, which is pretty unusual for a regional museum. One is unwrapped and one is wrapped. So we have a great permanent Egyptian exhibit, an Asian exhibit with beautiful suits of samurai armor that are quite fascinating to really take a look at. We have an interactive exhibit called Black Earth, Big River, and you can go through that exhibit and feel like you are right in the forest and prairie lands that have been in this region over time. You learn about, there's a great large fish tank there with the kind of fish and turtles that you would find in the Mississippi River. Our community is right on the bank of the Mississippi, where the Mississippi runs east and west, between Davenport, Iowa, and Rock Island, Illinois. And then we have a traveling, or an exhibit that we built, on the Civil War. It's a great place to experience what the Civil War was like, because the Rock Island Arsenal had a Confederate prison. And in this area, you had people who, we were a Union state, but there were a large number of Southern sympathizers. We were kind of right on the border. And a lot to be learned there about the Civil War and the culture at the time, and how people survived with brothers fighting brothers. And then we have a discovery room for children with a lot of hands-on experience. We have a hall of mammals with polar bears and rhinoceros and zebras and lions and things of that nature. So we have a good number of permanent exhibits and traveling exhibits for everybody to enjoy.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I think I remember a lot of that, but that was back in September. So I think, it's like Now I got to go through my notes and my photos and, you know, like, what did I say? What did I say? You know? and what about the collection or what's coming in for us that you're getting?
What's coming in? Well, Native Waters is the traveling exhibit that goes along with the Grand Canyon film. And throughout April on the weekends, we have workshops we have Putnam Explorers. That's a fun science and history club for kids. We have Earth Day celebration on April 19th here about water. And then after the water exhibit, we have a motorcycle exhibit coming in from June 8th through September 8th, and that exhibit is called Rare Rides, Americans' Love Affair with Motorcycles.
Wow.
And we're going to have motorcycles dating back to 1912 through the current day. They are, as it says, rare, unique, bikes you don't see often. Part of that exhibit will have an area dedicated to women motorcyclists.
Wow.
We had a club here in the Quad Cities called the Motor Maids.
Uh-huh.
And these gals are now in their mid-80s, and they rode bikes back in the 1940s and 50s. I guess I would say before women riding motorcycles was cool. And they have a lot of memorabilia from those days. And we're going to open the exhibit with a motorcycle ride through our community, up the hill to our museum, and then a big party out in our parking lot. And people are more than welcome to join us if they're motorcycle enthusiasts. And what the exhibit is about is the way that motorcycles have shaped culture in America and the way American culture has shaped motorcycles and what they're about. In the early days, they were very utilitarian. In other words, if you couldn't afford one of those new Model Ts that were coming out, maybe you could get a motorized bicycle, and that would be your motorcycle, and have that to ride to work. I've seen a lot of wonderful old photographs of masses of people riding bicycles to work.
Yeah.
Well, this would be the next step up. Going through time when motorcycles serviced our soldiers in World War I and World War II, and then into the 50s when Marlon Brando and the Wild One kind of set the stage for what motorcycling was and counterculture and Easy Rider in the 60s and the foreign bikes of the Hondas and Yamahas that came in the 70s. So we've got a little something for everybody, and, of course, the American icons, the Indian motorcycle and the Harley-Davidson.
I was in York, Pennsylvania, where they have the Harley-Davidson, factory.
Oh.
And that was pretty cool because you got to watch all of the stages of how a motorcycle comes into play. So that was pretty cool. I think you're a little far from York, though.
We're a little ways from York.
From York, Pennsylvania.
But we hope that people from York and places from the East Coast will stop by and visit us on their way to Sturgis this summer,
mm-hmm.
for those folks who go out to South Dakota. And, of course, we're real interested in groups of people who've been motorcyclists from years ago up until those who love to ride motorcycles today, in them coming or even sharing some of their memorabilia with us.
Well,
that would
I hope,
be great.
I hope people will, you know, get to the Putnam, whether they're motorcyclists or not, actually. I really enjoyed, you know, with the Quad Cities that it was kind of unexpected to be able to go to all these places, you know, because it was like, yeah, right, okay, what's there, you know, and it was wonderful. I think I went, it was the beer festival, I guess, during that.
Ah.
Yeah, that's...
Because you were here in the fall.
Yeah, I was there in the fall.
Well, another thing we happen to have here, our IMAX is on a hill, which you know, of course, Merle, overlooking the river valley.
Uh-huh.
And so we have built the IMAX in an egg shape, and the balcony has a panoramic view of the river valley. It's one of the most stunning views in the whole community if you're a lover of water and the river.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. I do remember looking out a window.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, oh, that
quite
was...
a large window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, stunning, the area. I mean, it's one of the great things about it is, like, you can go, because you're going into the different cities, you could really get a sense of the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can even, like there's a boat, like a little boat you can, like, you know, that stops at,
that's
like,
right,
five or six places.
The Channel Cat.
Yeah, the Channel Cat. Yeah, did that. And
it'll take you from one side of the river to the other.
Yeah, so you can, you know, kind of get a sense, and taking a lot of the Quad Cities.
Right.
You know, I was trying to get somebody from the Figge? Is it?
Yes.
Art
Museum.
Yeah, because I was trying to kind of describe what was there, because that was one of the other, attraction.
Right.
You know, to take in.
And they weren't able to join you tonight?
No.
Well, the iconic pieces at the Figge are the Grant Woods.
Mm-hmm.
His self-portrait is there. And Haitian art and Mexican colonial art, and those are some of the really unique things that you find at the Figge on a year-round basis. And then, of course, they have wonderful traveling exhibits as well. Right now, they have a contemporary glass invitational showing at the Art Museum.
Yeah.
And the Art Museum is right on the river itself.
Yeah, the thing I remember is you can, like, go out go to the other side. There was a...
Yeah, there's a sky bridge near the Art Museum.
Yeah, sky bridge, yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, not to say that the inside of the museum isn't great, but that was one of the things that I had remembered about that.
Right.
There's a lot of art in that area, a lot.
There is. Downtown in Davenport and downtown in Rock Island, there are several art centers, art galleries, the Bucktown, the Quad City Arts. And I'm leaving one out. But it is a good arts mecca in the downtown areas there.
Yeah, that's
you can
which
see
is
a lot of local and regional art.
Yeah.
And also here this summer, Merle, I wanted to let people know that we are going to have a fun sea creatures 3D film called Sea Monsters. It's really about prehistoric animals that roamed in the water as opposed to on land. So it wouldn't be your Tyrannosaurus Rex, but it would be the animals that were in the vast oceans prehistorically. And it just looks like a great summer film, great family fun in 3D.
Wow! You know, it's like as I'm speaking with now, having spoken with Andrea from Country Corner, now speaking with you, it's like, yeah, I want to go back. You know, and it's gonna.
Well, I was raised here, Merle, and I've never left, actually. One of the things I love so much about the Quad Cities is not only the friendly people here, but that we have seasons here. And no matter what time of the year you come here, it's going to be beautiful. It is true. There's a lot of green here and large old trees, and it's pretty here. If you come in the fall, those trees have turned crimson and gold, and it's stunning. In the winter, it's sparkling white with snow on the ground, so... It's a lovely place.
But in terms of, like, and I'm sure, like, you know, places like you know, the Putnam is, like, kind of open year-round, and it's, you know,
yes,
an indoor thing. But in terms of, like, for people going there, what would you say that the summer is the best time in terms of, tourism?
I'm sure it is, because we have the Bix Beiderbecke Festival and the Bix Road Race, the 7-mile road race, and that brings out the most prestigious runners from around the world, actually. And a big influx of people in the July time frame for the Bix.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a high tourism time here. I happen to personally be a lover of the fall, so I like the autumn time frame with the crisp air and the beautiful trees. It's a great time to come and visit. We have wonderful bike paths on the riverfront. That's another summer to fall activity that is just stunning to ride along and see the river and the trees and the colors and maybe ride until sunset. Some of the most beautiful sunsets I've ever seen are right here.
Yeah, great. Well, you got a website?
We are at www.putnam, P-U-T-N-A-M, which is too easy to confuse with Putman, but it's Putnam, .org.
Okay.
And everything that's happening here is on the website.
Okay. That's great, because, I still haven't written about Quad Cities yet. This is the preview.
Great.
This is the radio preview.
Okay.
And then to all the writing that I'm going to be doing.
All right.
So you'll get to I'll send that off to you when it's begun. So I have several publications to write for.
We'll look forward to that.
Okay, and I appreciate your calling in and delivering not only stuff about Putnam, but information about other things.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
This is my home. I'm happy to welcome people here.
Okay, great. Thank you again, Kim. And I'll get back to you when the article is done. Okay.
Thank you, Merle.
Okay. Have a good evening.
Talk to you soon.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Well, we're going to break for a commercial again before our rejuvenation talk. what a thing to break with, got to do it.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get the Fairy Tale Brownies by going to www.brownies.com. That's they're so good. It's that their own website is just brownies. We're going to go on to now that we've that I've drooled over here on the computer. We're now going to go to some rejuvenation. As we talk, do I have Lynn?
Yes, you do.
Yes, from John Taylor Day Spa.
Yes,
So let's relax and rejuvenate. Tell us about the spa and what it is.
Okay. Well, first of all, we are both a salon and a spa, and we're about 5,000 square feet, and we offer body treatments, different massages, facials, we have pedicures, manicures, and we have hot shaves for men, we have microdermabrasion, we have teeth whitening, we have IPL, which is laser hair removal and other things that it does, and we have micropigmentation, which is sort of like tattooing, but we do eyebrows and eyeliner and things like that, and did I say teeth whitening? And we also do what we call spa parties, where we have groups come in and they consume our entire spa, and so they can have fun and have food and drinks and take turns getting spa treatments. And we're located just off a little ways off the Rock River here.
And that's which city of the Quad
Cities?
We're
in Rock Island,
okay.
Illinois, of the Quad Cities.
Okay. Now, tell us about like some signature treatments that you have.
Well, we have our Rock River Stone Therapy Massage, which is not that other spas don't do stone therapy treatments, but it is a treatment where the massage incorporates heated, smooth stones from the river here, and they're oiled, and that's incorporated in your massage, and then it's followed with a wrap, which they wrap like linen wraps around you, which is very detoxifying. And we have our massage for two, which is nice. We open up the room so you share a room with someone. And we have reflexology, which we do it with both our massages or our pedicures, which is where they work on the feet on the pressure points. And most of us know that all these pressure points affect all the organs and systems of the body, so that's
right.
A wonderful thing. We have our newest to the menu is our IPL, which is a laser treatment, which not everyone has yet, but it's a wonderful thing for vascular hair reduction, actually tattoo removal. And then we also have, it's kind of funny, we remove tattoos, but then we also put them on with our micropigmentation, or our, that's what I meant. And so where we're tattooing eyeliners and eyebrows on.
So it's not like you're tattooing like, you know, you're going to somebody
pictures.
Who's a tattoo artist to,
right,
to
right.
put on your eyebrows.
Yes, it's definitely more cosmetic rather than a picture of artwork on your body. It's to enhance what we have. Like a lot of us, our eyebrows get very sparse as we age, and so we get pretty tired of applying those eyebrows with the pencil. So this is done permanently with this, and that's a great thing. And some of us, especially blondes that get up in the morning, have no eyes. It's nice to wake up with eyeliner. I have both eyebrows and eyeliner done with this. And
why is that? I'm curious. Like, I know, like, okay, so you know, someone goes to a tattoo artist and they're, I don't know what they're using, but it sounds painful. Is this the same? Are you using the same kind of utensil that?
No, I don't have any of the tattoos, so I'm not sure quite what their tools look like, but our gal Terry that does ours, from what I know and see, hers has several little needles in it, so it's not like one needle at a time, and so it is different than what they use for the artwork tattoos, and it's not very painful, and I love having it. Another thing we have, is since we're in the beauty business, is we have our teeth whitening, which we actually take your impressions, and then we have those impressions sent into a lab, and then they make the trays, and then we have the whitener that goes with it, so you whiten your teeth at home. And then, another thing that I haven't said, we do have bridal services. So we do a lot of brides through the summer mostly, where we do their hair, makeup, manicures and pedicures, and we do the photography makeup, and we do veil placement. And then we have a little package for the man to get his shave and manicure for the wedding. And that keeps us quite busy.
Yeah. I remember something about do you do something with the Ayurvedics, I think it's called?
Oh, Shiradhara, maybe is what you're thinking of, and Shiradhara is When you're laying on a table and they, our therapists have a copper pot that's hanging above your forehead, and they put warmed oil in it, and it drips across your forehead. Some people call it your third eye. And it's very relaxing, but some people claim that it's, you know, a mood enhancer and gives circulation to the brain and gives better memory and all that. And then your scalp is massaged with that oil, which is great on your scalp. And so that is a fairly new thing that we have too, and it is very, very relaxing.
What kind of oil is used? I'm just curious.
I want to say sunflower oil, but I'm not sure. Can't remember now.
I mean, it's not like olive oil or?
No, it isn't. It is not olive oil.
Okay.
The
other thing I wanted, the other thing before I want to get back to the thing, I'm curious with the thing with the eyebrows. When you're doing these type of things, like for instance, are you shaving off the eyebrow that's whatever's there before you do it?
Some micropigmentation artists do remove the hair first. We do not. It's very simple to do with your eyebrow already there. Plus, you can see the natural flow of the hair. So we do not, though some people choose to do that. So
because I was wondering if you're removing the hair, you know, doesn't it come back?
Yes, it does.
Oh, so it's
yes.
So you go.
You go in one room and have the eyebrows put on where you want them.
Right.
And then you go into our wax room and we remove the hair where you don't want it.
Right.
So.
But when you in terms of maintaining it, the hairs are going to grow in, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that in maintaining it, you wax it or you shave it or what? I mean, what do you do? Pluck it?
Well, you. You would have it waxed. You could tweeze those hairs out depending on how much hair there is. We personally, you know, do the waxing and the body waxing and the facial waxing. So that is our choice. That's our first choice, is that we would remove that unwanted hair with wax. But now we have our RPL laser, which is also for hair reduction, so now we could actually do it that way, too.
Oh, okay.
Which is more permanent.
So
we put things on where you want them, and we take things off where you don't want them.
So in other words, but I don't think it's like you can take the fat off your rear end and stick it someplace else. No, I guess not.
Yeah, well, not in a spa environment.
No,
you
not
can
that,
go right
no.
down the... A couple blocks from us is the Trinity Healthcare. Maybe they can do that, but we do not.
Okay. It's great. Now, do you have a website too?
Yes, we do, and it's johntaylordayspa.com.
Oh, that's easy enough, you know.
Yep.
You can meet
our staff on our website, and you can actually get a tour on our website. And eventually we'll have where you can book appointments on our website. And if you come to the Quad Cities to visit, we would suggest that you call a few days to a week ahead for a reservation. But it's a great way to be introduced to us by getting on our website, because you actually see the place before you arrive.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks so much for calling in.
I was happy to.
I'm ready to go on. We got two more locations to talk about.
Okay. I'll let you go then.
Okay, great. I really appreciate you sharing the information, too.
Thank you, Merle. I enjoyed it.
Okay. And I had a great time, by the way. You know that I did. And the
and
the products are great. I tried the products.
Good. Good. I'm glad you liked them. Yes, we have our own body line, so that's great.
Just wanted to
thank
let
you,
Merle. Know that.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank
have
you.
A good evening.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, So what you're going to do, yeah, it's time. You know, we got the bills to pay. No, we don't. But I got a break for this commercial anyway.
Italy, Spain, Greece, Turkey. Stuff it. We do at Santa Barbara Olive Company. Jalapenos, sun-dried tomatoes, almonds, blue cheese, stuff produced in California. And we stuff some of our cold-pressed olive oils with California garlic and herbs grown right here in our backyard. Our olive oils have been pitted against some of the finest imports, and guess who exceeds in taste tests? Santa Barbara Olive Company. It's the stuff that makes a product great.
Oh, yeah, I know. You're all getting hungry now. Well, what can I tell you? Well, we're going to find out how, next, we're going to find out how the town of the city of Davenport got its name, because we're going to be talking about the Davenport House, and I guess right, we have John Norton on the phone, I hope?
Yes, you do.
Oh, John, hi. So, yeah,
hi.
Tell us all about the... first I want to first mention that you're on Rock Island, and I understand because you're near the arsenal that you first have to get a pass or something just to go on this area?
Yes, that's correct. It's a federal property. It's a U.S. Army installation, and because of that, you simply have to show a photo ID to come onto the installation, and once you're on, there's no problem at all getting to any of the historic sites on this National Historic Landmark island.
Okay.
The whole
and
island
there are,
is the land.
Yeah, there are a number of sites, but in particular, we wanted to talk about the Davenport House. So tell us what this is all about and how it got there and anything else you want to say.
Well, Colonel George Davenport was one of those Enlightenment men of the late 18th century who came to this United States from England. And he was a seaman arriving in New York. He helped save a fellow seaman from drowning, and in doing so, he broke his leg. And that put him on land, unfortunately, in New York City with nothing else to do. And he decided that it was not a bad thing to head west, like most all the other young people were doing. He served a stint in the U.S. Army, and then he came out to Rock Island as the U.S. Army was beginning to make its presence known up and down the Mississippi to make sure that the Louisiana Purchase and the river itself were protected from errant Frenchmen and Englishmen who might want to still continue to do business there. And so Colonel George Davenport, as he was finally called, ended up out there as a settler, and he built a magnificent home in 1833, 1834, which is the oldest remaining residence in the Quad Cities, Davenport, Moline, Rock Island, and Bettendorf.
And tell us about, like, what's in the house and how the house came about.
The house was essentially a family project of Colonel Davenport, who was an extremely important fur trader working for the American Fur Company, John Jacob Astor's business that ran up and down the Mississippi all the way into Canada. And he built this home as essentially a federal-style mansion on the outside, but underneath it's just a plain old-fashioned two-story timbered house. It's like a big log cabin, very substantially built. And then over the years, as his family grew and he prospered, he added two wings in what they call balloon frame construction, which was much lighter and didn't last. And finally, in the period of the Civil War, when the Rock Island Arsenal became a Civil War prison for Confederate soldiers, the house was taken over by the government, because by that time, Colonel George Davenport was dead. He was actually murdered in the late 1840s. And the home eventually fell into disuse and was almost ready to collapse at the turn of the century when a group of Quad Citians involved with the building trades decided they needed to restore the building. So in 1907, it went through its first major restoration. And then over the years, a succession of charitable efforts were launched, including the creation of the Colonel Davenport Historical Foundation. And we did another major restoration in 1988, putting the West Wing back on the building, which now generates income through its sutlery, where historic artifacts are sold.
Do you have any secrets or stories or interesting stories about the place or something?
There are wonderful stories about it. Perhaps the most famous one is the Banditti of the Prairie, because on the 4th of July in the mid-1840s, one of those beautiful days that everyone remembers, Colonel George Davenport sent his family out to enjoy the 4th of July festivities while he stayed home. And while he was there alone, he was accosted by a group of what they call the Banditti of the Prairie. He was wounded by them and tortured. They tried to get money out of him, and unfortunately for him, he didn't have any at home. He was smart enough to have all of his investments out in properties and furs and other things. And he was left there to die, and he did so about a day after the Banditti fled. They caught him. They caught the Banditti, and they strung three of them up in probably the biggest public event ever held in Rock Island.
Really? Is there any, I can't say that that's an anecdote. Oh, but is there any, because I was going to ask you if you have any humorous.
Well, there are lots of small humorous stories about the place. One of the most important things we do now is work with educators in the Quad Cities to bring young people in to see the house that in effect created the Davenport community and what later became the Quad Cities. And those kids ask all sorts of very funny questions sometimes about how the Mississippi River got there, why it runs east and west instead of north and south. That's one of the strange things about the Quad Cities. The river runs at right angles to what it does normally. And, of course, there was a famous earthquake here in the early 1800s that changed the course of the river. So those are some of the small things.
Okay.
Yeah.
And does do people like the kids? What's it? Can you think of like the funniest things that they'll ask you, or?
Oh, I think the one thing they ask is why people hunted furs, because you don't think of wearing furs today. But in the 1800s and late 1700s, that was a very, very lucrative form of not only hunting and trading, but also creating luxury clothing for people in prosperous areas like New York City or in Europe. And so there were fur traders working all up and down the Mississippi River under the leadership of this American Fur Company with John Jacob Astor. And Colonel Davenport was one of those traders. He also dealt very actively with the Indians and was respected deeply by the Indians. He spoke their languages, which is unusual for most white people. And after he was murdered, the Indians actually put a memorial totem up in his memory, and there's still a copy of that at the Colonel Davenport home.
Great. Yeah, so there's you have a little gift shop, right? So you can.
Yes, we do.
Okay, that's great. Now, and what's like when are you open? Like, are you open all year round? And
we're open essentially during the spring and summer months. We open on the 3rd of May this year, and we're open from 12 to 4 p.m. and we stay open through October. There's a membership donation of $5 for adults. And there are special arrangements for children's, especially students' groups that come in, because we do like to make sure that local history teachers get an opportunity to bring their kids over to learn about the roots of the Quad Cities.
Now, let me ask you, I'm trying to remember, I know that area there with all the, yeah, I don't want to go into the whole thing about how everybody can see wonderful guns and whatever. We have enough dealing with that, right? But
well, all of the guns on the Rock Island Arsenal are safe, fortunately.
Yeah,
and they're
but,
well displayed.
I mean, people, yeah, if you want to, I just rather not. That's not something I particularly want to push. But that's,
I can understand that. I just
so I can get my bearings, and maybe it's because it was September. Are you near where the lock is?
Yes, we're right next to the lock and dam.
Okay.
And there's a very fine Corps of Engineers museum and exhibit area about the locks on the river immediately adjacent to the Colonel Davenport home. And that's as interesting as the home itself. It shows how the lock and dam system on the Mississippi works to control the water.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Because I thought that it was nearby. Yeah. I had gone, and I believe I went through those locks when I was on the Mississippi Queen.
That's right. That's right. You would have.
Yeah.
Both the Mississippi Queen and the Delta Queen.
And the Delta Queen.
Do sail that part of the river.
Okay.
And then we have our own cruise boats that also work the Mississippi on daily basis, so people don't have to wait to get on the Delta Queen or the American Queen to see the area. They can come and take a day trip on one of the local boats.
Great. That's fabulous. I appreciate you calling in and you know getting us this information.
I hope you enjoyed your own trip out.
Oh, I did. The Quad Cities is great. I was just saying, I'm ready to go back there again. To see some, either what I haven't seen or view some of the things that I have seen already. I mean, there are things that change. Like the museums.
Yeah.
That, have
That's
changing
right.
things there.
There's an extremely good local museum, the Putnam Museum.
Oh, that's who I just had on.
Yeah, good.
I just had them
good.
On the air, yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
yeah
we talked all about that. So,
yeah,
all right.
The Figge Art Museum is also extremely impressive.
Right.
Okay.
All right, thank you so much, John. I appreciate you calling in.
You're welcome.
And you'll see this when I finally get to writing up the article.
Okay, I appreciate that.
About
I hope they gave you enough literature to supply you with a lot of background material that I couldn't.
Oh yes, I have, and there's always, and that's why they have a web. That's why you can. That's why you can Google.
That's right. There is a good Google for that Colonel Davenport home.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Right, and have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye. Yeah. Well, see, that's. Now you know what you can do with your semen. And, before our next caller calls, I'm in the mood for a little music, so I want to take a break for, let's see, I got the Buffy St. Marie. I haven't heard. I'm in the mood for Melissa right now. Here we go.
It's been years since they told her about it. The darkness her body possessed. And the scars are still there in the mirror. Every day that she gets herself dressed. Though the pain is miles and miles behind her. And the fear is now a docile beast. If you ask her why she is still running, she'll tell you it makes her complete. I run for hope. I run to fear. I run for the truth, for all that is real. I run for your mother, your sister, your wife. I run for you. How the darkness had taken its toll. And they cut into my skin. And they cut into my body. But they will never get a piece of my soul. And now I'm still learning the lesson. To awake when I hear the call. And if you ask me why I am still running, tell you I run for a soul. I run for hope. I run to feel. I run for the truth, for all that is real. I run for your mind. if the darkness knocks on your door. Remember her, remember me. We will be running as we have before, running for answers, running for more.
Sometimes it just gotta go.
I can understand.
That's why I have music. So, anyway, Al is. We got Al from John Deere. So tell us first of all, give me the quick history on John Deere.
Well, to some people's surprise, perhaps, because we do get the question periodically about whether John Deere actually was a person. In fact, he was. And John Deere was a blacksmith, and his claim to fame was a commercially successful self-scouring steel plow. And that was such an innovative tool for farmers in the Midwest, because many of the farmers, as they moved from the east where the soil was pretty sandy, they brought along their cast iron plows, and although they worked very well in the sandy soil, they proved to be not quite as effective in the sticky, heavy soils of the Midwest. And so John Deere grew up in the east in Vermont. And in 1836, he moved to Illinois to apply his trade as a blacksmith, and very quickly discovered this problem that farmers were having. And so he studied the problem. He was able to take a broken sawmill blade, which is made out of steel, polished it and formed it properly. And right from the beginning, that plow was quite successful. The farmers were, in fact, quite amazed at how easily the soil would basically peel off the face of that plow, which saved farmers at that point in time a great deal of valuable time as they were preparing their soils for planting. And then about in 1848, John Deere moved to Moline, Illinois, and established his first plow factory right on the banks of the Mississippi. And that kind of brings us up to, in one respect, present day, in that the facilities that we have today, which we call the John Deere Attractions, are actually located just across the street from where John Deere established his original factory.
And so at this, what can you see when you're there?
Well, we have a number of facilities. One of those is called the John Deere Pavilion. And there we showcase the history of agriculture, basically, past, present, and future. Inside that facility, people are able to view the latest John Deere equipment, farm equipment, also some of our older pieces, and take some time to experience many of the interactive exhibits that we have as well, to learn more about the history of agriculture, as I said, and also take a turn at the steering wheel of a tractor in a interactive exhibit that actually allows them to steer the tractor through the field and to basically apply their skill at planting and preparing the soil for seed, as well as step into a combine and actually harvest the crop, all on an interactive screen. And the interesting part about that display is that first time they can go through on their own and see how skilled they are at controlling the tractor and trying to maintain straight rows and so on as they go through the field. And then they can basically select a button which simulates the technology that's available to farmers today, where they can use satellite technology, GPS, basically the same type of a system that you'll find in some cars and some add-on location finders for automobiles today, that a similar technology is applied in agriculture today to let the tractor operator know where he is on the face of the earth, basically, and enable that very precise technology to help him to help guide him through the fields. And that saves him a great deal of time and money, actually, in terms of not overlapping as he goes through his field pass after pass and so on. So it ends up saving time and money for the farmers today. And then in addition, right next to the pavilion, we have a retail store, which we call the John Deere store. And in there, there's a very wide variety of John Deere licensed products that are available for purchase. And in addition, there are some videos and various things there, which are playing all the time, which enable people to, again, learn a little more about some of the history of agriculture and the company as well. And those, of course, are available if somebody wishes to purchase those too. And then just to the east of those facilities, one block away, in fact, is another very interesting place we like to think for visitors to come and experience, which is called the John Deere Collector Center. And even though the name says Collector Center on it, and some people sometimes think that, well, gosh, I don't know whether I should go in because, you know, maybe they're an individual who doesn't necessarily collect John Deere equipment or memorabilia. But quite honestly, that facility is open for everyone to enjoy. So we certainly invite anyone who, whether they're a collector or not, to come in and experience that. In there, they will see primarily older equipment, mostly from, say, 1972 and earlier. And many of those machines in there are actually privately owned. And these individuals have meticulously restored those tractors, primarily tractors. There's implements there as well. They have asked us if they could display their restoration in that building. And so we, every so often, roughly about every 6 months or so, we're actually on a staggered schedule, so we're always turning machines in and out of there so that there's always an interesting assortment there. And most people are quite surprised to learn that most of those tractors in there are actually privately owned. And again, an interesting thing there is that every one of those tractors or implements that are displayed have a story that goes along with them, some connection that the person who owns it finds of significance. For example, maybe that tractor was a similar model to one that this person's father used on the farm when he was farming and the current owner was growing up on the farm. Or maybe there was some other significance there in terms of either a family member or something else which makes that particular tractor or implement particularly valuable in that person's mind. So you can learn a lot about not only the equipment there, but a lot about these stories, which really tends to bring them to life. And then I would also mention here that about 70 miles east of Moline is the site of where earlier on I mentioned when John Deere moved from Vermont to Illinois,
mm-hmm.
he settled in Grand Detour, Illinois. And we still maintain the site today, which was the original site of John Deere's blacksmith shop when he moved to Illinois. And so there, for people who wish to visit, is not only the archaeological dig, which reveals the original location of the blacksmith shop, but then in addition, we have a recreation of that blacksmith shop very close by, a few steps away, where we have our John Deere blacksmith today still applying the blacksmith trade that, of course, had made John Deere very, I guess you could almost say, famous from the blacksmith trade, and then later as he perfected the steel plow and so on, that really became his claim to fame, so to speak. So you can see actual demonstrations there of blacksmithing. We have a very informative as well as entertaining, I would say, a blacksmith. His name is Rick Trahan. He really enjoys what he does. He really likes meeting people and talking about the history of the company and specifically what John Deere did and the contributions that he made to agriculture and how he really got the company started way back there in 1837 in Grand Detour.
Now, did he had a home there, right?
Yes, he did, That home is still there today, as a matter of fact.
Weren't they renovating it like last September or something?
Well, actually, the facility that we were renovating last year was what we call the neighbor's home.
Oh, okay.
It was not John Deere's home, but a neighbor that was close by, and that is our gift shop in our administrative area. And
uh-huh.
So that is all nicely renovated again. The work and the detail on that is very, very nice. And so we also have that gift shop, and then of course John Deere's actual home. Where he and the family lived for a number of years before they moved to Moline, Illinois.
Okay, so and now to come to, do we just Google John? I mean, go to website johndeere.com. Is that
you could do johndeere.com, and on the landing page there's a toward the middle of the page there's a link called John Deere Attractions, and you can click on that. And it will give a great deal of information about each of the attractions, the hours that we're open. And incidentally, all of our facilities are free of charge with the exception of the Grand Detour site. There is a $3 admission charge there for guests who are 12 years old and older.
Okay. That's great. I really appreciate, Al, I appreciate your calling in I wanted to make sure people got, you know, to know that this is another great attraction to see. I'm going to be speaking to somebody. I want to do a product review. I want to do something. I want to get a John Deere lawnmower and compare it to something like Sears and see why.
Okay.
But you're not the person to deal with that, right?
Oh, that would be correct there. I would defer to one of our product people there on that one.
Okay. I'll get a hold of somebody there.
Sure, sure. And we'd be glad to help you find someone if needs be. Just give me a jingle or contact our public relations group there at
Great.
Corporate headquarters.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. The show is going to end soon, so I have to do some last-minute stuff. And have a great evening, and look for the articles in the papers.
We most certainly will, Merle. And thank you so much for the invite. We've enjoyed it very much.
Okay, good night.
You bet. Good night.
Well, folks, yep, I'm ending the show now. And just want to let you know the show is going to start earlier next week. I'm going to be in Branson, Missouri, doing the show from there. So go to the website and see the time. I don't think it's much different, but I have to make sure I can have time for people to call in.
Radio.
say hello to everyone. Say goodbye to everyone.
I know you're the host of the show. I understand.